In 28 years of priestly preaching, I would say without a doubt, this is the most fun gospel to preach. And especially when there are children in the congregation. I've had lots of fun with it over the years, trying to recapture that scene we've just proclaimed, teasing the kids to pretend that they're there and think what it would have been like. Everybody pretty much knows there's not enough to go around, just a few loaves, a couple of fish. Everybody's, in a sense, already adjusted to missing a meal. And next thing you know, these apostles are walking among the crowd, handing out bread, handing out bread, handing out bread. Well, the people back there were sure this wasn't their day. It was bound to be gone before they got anywhere into the crowd. But they keep coming, and they keep coming, and the eyes of the children get bigger and bigger, and they're trying to figure out what's going on here. One nudges another and says, "What do they got there? Bottomless baskets? Hey, what's going on? Where's all this bread coming from?" Oh, it's really fun to recall, to recapture, to try to experience that scene ourselves. Most of the time, somewhere inside ourselves, we say, "Oh boy, I sure wish I was there to see that. What a wonder work that was." But you know, over the years, I've come to realize that this very same gospel, and probably more so in these later years, this very same fun gospel is also one of the most outrageous and enraging gospel passages that was ever put down by the followers of Jesus. At the risk of being very blunt, putting it crudely, if your imagination catches you and you imagine this scene and believe in it, sooner or later, if you're looking around and you know what's happening in the world today, somewhere within you, maybe your whole being wants to say, "Jesus, where are you now?" If you could take 5 loaves and feed 5,000 plus, where are you when millions of people are dying of starvation? Oh, Jesus, where are you when we need you? Are you some mean-spirited, perverse magician that you would do that and prove that power and then let little innocent babies, God knows how many tired old elders, die of starvation? Oh, Jesus, you make me angry. You make me want to rage against God. Well, it's the most fun gospel, and at the same time, the most outrageous and enraging gospel, it is also the most challenging and humbling gospel passage, perhaps, for those who really listen. Because the answer to your objections, to your protests against God, even before you thought of making them, is right there also in this gospel passage. If you, in any sense, breathe anger at Jesus and say, "Where are you when we need you?" He's answering back and saying, "Don't tell me to disperse the people. You feed them." And if you get that, then be assured, just like me, just like everybody else, if you really get that message, almost before you can realize it's happening, your excuses will come bubbling up from within you. Me?
Me feed them? I only have 5 loaves, 2 little fish. What do you mean I should feed them? Of course, in modern times, we don't use that literal language. Sometimes our excuses sound very sophisticated. We might say, you mean upset the balance of power? You mean undermine the economic structure which makes our nation great? You mean give bread to beggars who, if they just go out and get an honest job, would have bread enough for themselves? Be assured, Jesus has long since heard all our excuses, whether we speak them in the language of the gospel literally or with the increasing sophistication of an increasingly selfish and self-serving people who have modern technological means that in a certain sense could almost make the miracle of the loaves and the fishes look like a poor preliminary. But we're still making the excuses. We're still in our own way calling on Jesus and saying, hey, wonder worker, bread from heaven, look at all these hungry people. Spare us the pain, the distraction, the distaste of not knowing when we turn on the evening news whether we're going to be confronted with more of those scrawny little babies with their eyes bugging out, their bellies bulging with starvation. Little children of Africa with black hair now turned red from malnutrition. Jesus, spare us that. If you could feed 5,000, not even counting the women and children, with 5 loaves, why don't you feed these hungry masses today? And Jesus says, you ask me to solve the problem? You yourselves feed them. And it is a sobering message. The truth is, and it is not a happy or comforting truth, but the truth is that the God who will do justice at the end and sort out everything will make it up to all those who died of hunger. But he will demand an accounting from all those who took more than their share of bread when they knew others were thirsty and hungry even to death. God's been trying to tell us this from before the coming of Jesus. Do you remember the story of the manna in the desert? God promised his people, trust in me, I will give you bread from heaven. They trusted up to a point. He sent them manna to feed them in that barren place. And what'd they do? What'd they do? They were told by Moses, take just enough for each day. And when Moses wasn't looking, they slipped out and gathered up a little bit more. Well, I mean, after all, suppose God should forget tomorrow. Or suppose the neighbors get out and get my share before I'm awake. Let's play it safe. Let's get a little more manna, put it under the baby's bed, hide it here under this flap of the tent. Do you know what happened then? All those greedy, selfish people, when they woke up in the morning and went to get their extra manna, they found it crawling with maggots. Now that story, my brothers and sisters, that story has been told and told and retold again every year through every age of our great mothers and fathers of the Hebrew covenant, down through every generation of the Christian era, and we still are not taking it seriously enough. Gather more than your share of the manna against the directive of your God and find maggots in your food has a much deeper meaning. Be selfish and lacking in trust and faith, and the riches that you store up for yourself will someday be like a rotted curse in your hands. The apostles made excuses to Jesus. They said it was not enough. Who could disagree with them? How can 5 loaves and 2 fish be enough even for this gathering here, let alone perhaps 10,000? They were being practical. They were being realistic. But Jesus responded, I think, if it were happening historically today and he were to use our contemporary language, we could easily picture Jesus saying, hey, you guys, give me a break. How often must I tell you? How many times must I show you? Well, here you are. One more time. Once and for all. Once for all the people. And once for all the ages, give me that. Give me your, you would say, puny bit of bread. Give it to me. Now watch this. You take that not enough, that only little bit. You take that not only into your hands, but into your heart. And you look to heaven. And you tell God you do believe and you do love. Bless and consecrate that not enough with your act of faith and sharing, and lo and behold, your not enough becomes more than sufficient for the hungers in the people around you. Jesus is speaking to us today. He's saying to us, stop asking me to disperse the crowd. He hears our experts, you know. Our scientific and demographic experts who say, well, it's all so simple. If you're educated enough to understand the complexities, it becomes very simple. We have too many people and not enough food. So, sorry about this, but we'll just have to get rid of some of the people. Oh, sometimes that comes as a kind of defense for abortion, for sophisticated techniques of birth control. Sometimes it comes as a well-intended effort by the nations with power to interfere and manage the affairs of smaller, defenseless nations. But basically what it all comes down to is making excuses. Well, there are experts, more than enough, who look at the same facts with the eyes of faith and tell us what Jesus told those apostles then. Do not try to disperse the crowd. You yourselves feed them. The problem is not that there's not enough. The problem is distribution. The problem is allocation. Or in more clearly Christian terms, the problem is in sharing. The problem is in loving and caring. That's the problem. That's why people starve, not because God did not provide. Be forewarned by the message of Jesus. If you make excuses, and if you further harden your hearts in the face of the challenge to share your bread with the hungry, know that this God whom you question and this God whom you challenge retains the right to say to you in response, I, Yahweh God, have provided more than enough. How dare you challenge me saying there's not enough? Can you count the seed that brings forth the wheat in place after place? Have you ever walked and measured the arable land on this earth? Do you have any idea how many barns it would take to gather in the fruits of the field that come out of the blessing of creation as I arranged it? Can you count the fruit-bearing trees? Do you have any idea of the number of fish in the ocean? How dare, God says to us, you would blame me, author of all that is good. Your earth my earth to this day is producing much more than enough for all the mouths and all the hands and all the hungry hearts and bodies of my people. The problem is with you. It's sobering and it's frightening. God, we cannot deny it. We cannot escape it. God will let more babies die of starvation before he will be tricked by us into doing wonder works again for which there is no need. Somehow, he will compensate to all those who were left out when they arrive in the kingdom forever. But God, spare us. If we are not able, when our day and our moment comes, to be able to testify before him that at last we got the message of Jesus and we began to share, we took the risk of faith, believing that the good things of God would be sufficient for all his people if they are but shared in love and the risk which faith inspires. On the front of our bulletin today, we highlight those words of Jesus. Do not you ask me to disperse the crowd. You yourselves feed them. And we quote the beautiful and lovable bishop who dared to give new dignity to the poor, who raised one of the problems of those who would try to change the order of things, Elder Kamara, who said, when I just go and give bread to the poor, they call me a saint. But if I challenge those in power and I say, how come you've got so much? How come you have problems of indigestion and overweight and excess property while little babies are dying? In a word, why are there some without bread? They call me a communist. They call me the problem. This morning's Post has a very interesting article in the Outlook section. I think the title is, How Much Is Your Boss Worth? And I find it kind of interesting because that idea is one that some of us have been expressing for years. But truth to tell, we're kind of careful where we say it and how. Dare not look too passionate about it, because you might be labeled a commie too. An upstart, a troublemaker, an overthrower of the proven and workable order of things. But my brothers and my sisters, surely the day has to come where the people at large say there is no such thing as a man or woman on this earth worth $2 or $3 million a year while there are people hungry and hurting and starving to death. Indeed, if we were humble enough before God, in the context of our economy, we'd say, there never will be anyone worth several million, while the ordinary workers are given such a pitiful, measly, paltry part of the profits of our economic order. They better watch out, those guys with the power. Because if this article in the Post is telling the truth, you know what's happening? I didn't really think I was going to live to see it. Not just the poor folks are complaining, but the people at the middle management level are finally waking up and realizing that at their worst, they're worth more in terms of the share they're being given. And the bosses and the power folks at their best aren't nearly worth the large shares they're taking for themselves. These are troubling times. Even as I speak, babies are dying. Even as we sit here about to give thanks to God for the holy bread which gives us life and renews our faith, even while we're doing this, thousands of people are slipping into eternity, starved in body and spirit. God will not solve the problem in some new way because we railed and criticized against him. God has already provided the answer, and it is in Jesus, who this day says, "Don't ask me to disperse or to erase the hungry hordes, the crowd that is too much. I say to you, you feed them." But you know, you won't be able to make that challenge of Jesus really, really work in you and in us unless we together move more deeply into the spirit of Paul, who spoke to the Romans in the words of this day's scripture. We need to be able to say, in the face of economic challenge and the fear of sharing and concern for our old age and security, we need to say with the apostle, "Well, who can separate me from the love of Christ? Loss of job? Getting old? Slowing down? Why, not even death itself can separate me from the love of Christ." And when we have that spirit, we will be able to respond from way down deep within us. Please God, we will. Respond or not, Jesus is saying, "Now, I'm not going to disperse the crowds. I am not going to solve the problems. You yourselves feed them."